Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the APN News and Media Investor Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Today's presentation will be followed by a question-and-answer session. To queue for a question, please press star one on your telephone. I must also advise that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, June the 21st, 2012. Would now like to hand the conference over to your host today, Mr. Brett Chenoweth. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning all and welcome. It's our pleasure to be here this morning to make this announcement around our strategic acquisition investment into Brands Exclusive. You will have seen the market announcement this morning, and this is a major milestone for us and something that we've been working towards for some time and clearly consistent with the strategic positioning that we've outlined to you previously and certainly as recently as the AGM a month and a half ago. So, you know, from our perspective today, this is quite an exciting announcement, a really important partnership with Rolf and Daniel in particular. And what we thought we'd do this morning, understanding that it's a busy media news week and understanding that you're very busy with the reports and things that you're doing, that Matt Crockett, our Chief Development Officer, would walk you through the terms of the deal. I've got Peter Myers here with me as well. We also have Daniel and Rolf here with me to answer any questions at the end. The thought that Matt could take us through the terms of the deal, talk a little bit about the business, and then we'll open it up for questions. Matt?
Thank you very much, Brett. And it is a pleasure to be able to confirm that APN's acquired a majority stake in one of Australasia's leading e-commerce businesses, Brands Exclusive. Brands Exclusive is an online shopping club which partners directly with premium brands to offer exclusive sales to members with heavy discounts off recommended retail prices. Since they've started, over 1.8 members have joined, and there are approximately 70,000 new members joining each month to the business. Under the terms of the deal, APN has taken an 82% equity stake for an upfront investment of $36 million. There will be an additional payment of up to $30 million, which is contingent on achievement of earnings targets in the calendar 2013 year. Taking into account the additional payment, the total investment will represent a 7 to 8 times 2013 EBITDA multiple. The founders, Daniel Drosch and Rolf Weber, will retain a substantial equity holding and will continue to run the business. We are setting this up to be consistent with the way that we are operating our digital portfolio, which is based on a belief that early stage digital businesses are best run by digital entrepreneurs, and that's certainly proven very successful for us to date with our Grab One business and with our CC Media business, and we'll be doing that here as well. The structure of this deal is very similar to that which we did with Rob Wong at CC Media, which we acquired last year, in that it retains the entrepreneurs and highly incents them. It shares risks and rewards with them, and it's structured so that we mitigate the risk of us overpaying for the asset. In terms of the how does this fit in with our strategy, this acquisition is very consistent with our overall APN strategy to reposition ourselves towards high growth media assets and to be a high growth media company. And as we outlined at the Investor Day and the AGM, that's a high priority for us, and within that, e-commerce has been one of the high priority areas to find the right assets for us during the first half of this year. So I'm very pleased that we're able to follow through and secure such a powerful and good e-commerce asset as Brands Exclusive. We believe there's substantial value to be unlocked in the digital media landscape in the coming years overall, and that within that we're really focusing around connecting the audiences of our traditional media businesses with high growth digital transaction businesses like BEX, and that this will allow us to take advantage of emerging business models and to tap in the next wave of advertising solutions. And together all of this will strengthen both our traditional assets but also bring real value to the new digital ventures, and we've been doing that very successfully to date, for example, with our Grab One business. E-commerce itself is one of the fastest growing and highest potential digital transaction sectors, and we believe that the Brands Exclusive acquisition will enable us to substantially ramp up our digital revenue and earnings trajectory over the coming years. And in fact, even this year, the Brands Exclusive acquisition will almost double APN's revenue coming from digital, as the business is on track to do about $70 million of revenue this year. It does follow on from two other recent growth-enabling transactions that you will be aware of. Firstly, establishing the APN Outdoor joint venture with Quadrant Private Equity, which is about bringing in a growth-oriented partner and about raising the capital to really fund growth both within outdoor but also within our broader growth portfolio, as well as our increasing our equity to 100% in GrabOne, which we did recently, which is a high-performing digital transaction business itself, which has quite a lot of similarities with and synergies with the brand's exclusive business. So why e-commerce in a little bit more detail? We believe there's substantial value to be unlocked there, and that it will be a core part of the landscape. Many of the capabilities needed to win in e-commerce, notably building and engaging an audience and connecting them with advertisers, are held by us overall as a media company. We also have real proven expertise in digital transaction businesses that enable commerce between advertisers and online member-based audiences. In GrabOne's case, it's about helping merchants be able to connect with and market to audiences around typically daily deal service propositions. In Brands Exclusive's case, it's about helping brands connect with a direct audience and actually helping them to shift and sell product to them. So we believe there's a lot of similarities and synergies, and certainly this is not completely new territory for us. And we do think that our broadcast media assets in publishing, radio and outdoor will be able to rapidly increase the audience and growth of Brands Exclusive through helping build brand awareness, and there may even be opportunities to actually leverage some of the content that we've got to enhance the Brands Exclusive proposition. And certainly we did that very successfully with GrabOne when we launched it in the early days to really help accelerate its growth trajectory. So why Brands Exclusive, and why the sort of the area of e-commerce that Brands Exclusive is playing in? We've selected an online shopping club model as our investment due to it having a few features that we like. Firstly, it's a no or very low inventory model. It has much lower working capital and risk than full inventory e-commerce models. It's member-based around digital direct marketing, which is something we're familiar with, as I just mentioned. And it has a favourable cash profile, with cash from consumers being received before payments are made to the supplier brands, meaning that it has quite a positive cash profile for such a fast-growing, relatively early-stage business. We do very much believe that Brands Exclusive is one of the fastest-growing and most capable e-commerce players in Australasia, and that Daniel and Rolf are two of Australasia's top e-commerce entrepreneurs, and in fact two of Australia's top digital entrepreneurs, full stop. They've, beyond Brands Exclusive, they were also co-founders in both Spreets and Style Treads, which have been very successful businesses that have been spun off to various owners, as you know. And look, we think that retaining the guys and their capabilities will be really key in driving growth and value in Brands Exclusive, and we also think they're going to contribute a huge amount to our broader execution of our broader APN digital strategy. You know, and we've obviously undertaken pretty extensive due diligence over recent months, and we feel very confident that beyond the two founders, Brands Exclusive has a very capable management team, a great culture, and a great set of people more broadly. So in closing, the acquisition, we believe, substantially increases our digital capability and will accelerate our revenue and earnings trajectory over the coming years. It gives us one of the best e-commerce assets in Australasia, supports our strategy to reposition APN into a high-growth media company. It's on track. The business is on track to deliver $70 million of revenue in 2012, with clear potential for substantial revenue and operating earnings growth in 2013 and beyond. The terms of the deal have us at an upfront investment of $36 million, and then the second tranche contingent on actually driving that revenue and, in particular, profit growth. And both we and the founders feel confident that growth potential is there, and hence is why we're willing to share the risk around the deal. It secures two of Australasia's best e-commerce entrepreneurs, and with strong incentives for them to stick around with us and to actually drive growth in the business and contribute to our broader efforts over at least the next 3 to 4 years. And it does build on our strengthening track record of working successfully with digital entrepreneurs, for example, Shane Bradley and GrabOne and Rob Wong and CC Media. And finally, we think it will bring real synergies and capabilities to GrabOne, our other digital ventures such as CC Media, as well as to our broader portfolio of businesses. So we're very excited about the acquisition. I'm going to pass over now to questions. So, operator, if you could open up to questions now, that would be appreciated.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the question and answer session. To queue for a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. And your first question comes from the line of Justin Diddams from Citi. Go ahead, please.
Morning, guys. Couple of questions from me. I was just wondering if you could provide the current multiple for EBITDA for the business, based on the $36 million paid up front, just to give us an idea of the starting point for the business. And second question, just around if you could give us an idea around fixed versus variable costs for the business, so we can understand sort of the split of headcount versus the inventory requirement, and the ongoing costs. And then just the third question around, how big can the subscriber base get? You know, at 1.8 million people, penetration's around 20% of sort of active shoppers out there in the market. So how much bigger the marketplace can get, or whether it's more actually a share of wallet that you're after, if you could put some numbers around that, that'd be interesting. Thanks.
Okay, no worries. So in terms of the current financial situation, the business was profitable in the second half of 2011. So it has proven its profitability. This year the business has been, and in fact will be, accelerating growth enabling investment. So we're not anticipating the business to be contributing to APN's earnings during the 2012 years, but that's an explicit decision to invest now to ramp up the acquisition and revenue trajectory. And it's off the back of that we and the founders have confidence in the revenue and earnings objectives that we've got next year and for the years beyond. So it's probably a bit meaningless to give an EBITDA multiple right now. The business has got substantial revenues, has proven profitability, and we're both confident that it's going to have strong growth and profitability next year off the back of the investments we're making this year. So that's the first question. In terms of the fixed versus variable costs, I might ask Daniel or Rolf if you'd like to comment on that.
Online business models typically have very low fixed costs, so Brands Exclusive has almost very little fixed cost, and main is basically the variable costs. In distribution, we run a no inventory model, so there is no inventory holding. It is about the distribution of the product. The main cost drivers in the business are labor and rents.
Thank you. And finally, in terms of how big that we think it can be, certainly drawing on the experience of online shopping clubs internationally, and the guys have very strong relationships with a number of different offshore players, which was actually part of what impressed us about the capabilities that the guys have. In more mature markets, 10% of the population is a pretty good litmus test for that, so we think 2.5 is absolutely achievable, and that's just within Australia, and there's obviously potential to grow offshore, including to New Zealand, even though our main priority in the short term is going to be to focus on the Australian market.
Could I just ask then a follow-up on that? If all the costs are variable, then based on kind of the $30 million earnout, which is sort of almost double the value of the deal and the multiple, I'm kind of wondering how earnings are going to double in the next year to achieve the 8x multiple. I'm sort of, given there's so much variability in the costs, then I'm wondering how margins are going to double in effect to try and achieve the multiple that's being paid based on the earnout. I'm having trouble rationalising how that all works.
That I would answer that. I mean, part of it is, there's obviously fixed costs from the sense of overheads and so on, and the guys have actually put in a really impressive team that's the right kind of team you want for a business that we think can be a very large business over time. Plus, this year, effectively, the variable costs are very high because we're going to be ramping up acquisition and spending quite substantially to acquire members. And, given a decent chunk of that will be in the back half of the year, we won't reap the rewards of that until next year. And the business is that, and this is why it's quite an attractive timing for us to get involved, both in that we can help with that ramp up in acquisition, help actually mitigate some of the costs of ramping up the acquisition, but also because the business is on the cusp of hitting the sweet spot of actual scale where it really isn't going to start generating strong earnings. And as I think you may have hinted at before, we haven't got any aggressive assumptions within our planning around the the additional sales that we can make to the existing customer base. So we're kind of projecting forward, I think, pretty conservative estimates. So if we can successfully move into other verticals and ramp them up really powerfully, then we think there's upside there as well. So we do think this business is a fantastic platform, one from which we can grow from, and that is on the cusp of strong earnings growth.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Justin.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Jacqueline Tai from Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks for your time this morning. Just a couple of them more clarifying questions. The first one is basically, and you touched on a bit of this before, but the $30 million based on the earning targets for FY13, can we, just to understand, if those targets aren't met, is it basically 100% of that amount is forfeited?
Basically, that is correct.
Right.
But it basically, it scales down from an objective target, which is in the business plan, but there is a cliff, if you like, over which there's no payment at all below that achievement. And as you said, we've actually, you know, quite thoughtfully structured the deal so that within all of those realistic ranges that the effective EBITDA multiple is a 7 to 8 times.
Sure. Okay. And then the second question, if we just projected, say, a $70 million revenue for FY13 and based on an EBITDA multiple of 7 to 8 times, I'm looking at margins of about 12 to 13% versus APN is currently at about 19 to 20%. I mean, I guess you've explained the rationale as well, but I guess financially the rationale, do you expect these margins to increase substantially more?
No, look, I actually think that, you know, sustainable margins in this business are probably within that frame of reference. Now, what you have to remember here, though, is that this is a business that's scaling very quickly, so the absolute dollars that come from those margins is very high, A, and B, you know, this is a relatively low fixed cost, low capital business that doesn't hold inventory and heavy working capital and so on. So we actually think that in that nature, those margins are quite acceptable, and again, are consistent with what's been seen overseas in quite in very profitable and high growth online shopping club businesses.
Well, sorry, then just to follow up on what you said there, then I guess the barriers to entry are quite low, and there's a ton of online shopping websites out there in the market right now, and more to come. What's the sustainability of the business like? What kind of confidence do you have?
Yeah, well, we actually don't think the barriers to entry are low, and in
right.
fact that there is, you know, a kind of a minimum sort of scale that you need to get to, which is at least sort of $40-odd million of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, particularly in light of what's played out with the Ozsale acquisition of Buy and Vite, really, you know, there's us and there's Ozsale / Buy and Vite, and then there's no other players that are any near $40 million. So all the other players here are extremely subscale within the online shopping club market. And the guys have invested over the last sort of 3 years heavily in actually building the logistics and supply chain capabilities and so on, which aren't something you can just wave a magic wand and copy. So any
right.
of those new players getting involved and starting from scratch have a lot of work to catch up on. And part of what attracted us to Brands Exclusive is the guys have just done a major amount of work to set up their operational capabilities to be able to handle substantial growth from here. So they've actually bitten the bullet that other players who want to enter the market would have to do. So we're very confident in that, and I think we also have, you know, increasing returns to scale in terms of our membership base and building that, and that's before we really leverage any of the synergies across into the rest of the APN business. So we feel very confident, and, you know, and one of our key criteria for digital acquisitions is having a regionally defensible position, and we absolutely believe that Brands Exclusive like Grab One meets that criteria.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Dominique Davrincourt from CBA. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. Look, firstly, on the revenue of $70 million, are you able to tell us whether that's gross or net? That is it before the supplier takes its cut or after? That's the first question. And the second question is around your inventory model. Given you don't actually own the inventory, presumably there's a lot of risk associated with the distribution from the suppliers, and, I mean, how you think about delays and customer complaints. I mean, given you don't have a control over the inventory, I would imagine that you're pretty much in the hands of the supplier when it comes to distribution. And what's been your experience in terms of delays and, you know, them being able to distribute that inventory?
Okay, I'll take the first one and then pass over to maybe Rolf for the second one. In terms of the revenue is the gross revenue, so it is not the commission revenue that we get, so it is the gross value of goods sold, which is the way the accounting standards suggest that this is reported. And the second question, I'll pass over to Rolf and or Daniel to cover for you.
With regards to the customer experience, and I think that's what you're driving at, we've taken a lot of steps before we put a sale on in order to secure that inventory. So we get stock lists that are checked prior. We take a security margin of those stock lists supplied. We own the whole supply chain with regards to managing the customer contacts before the sale, after the sale, and if there's any returns from end to end. So that's what's also setting us apart. We believe that the whole supply chain and being in full control of it, i.e. doing it ourselves, is very important for an e-commerce player and especially a shopping club.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Darren Chin from Macquarie. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, guys. First question, just... in terms of that margin discussion earlier, I just wanted to put that question another way. For each incremental dollar of revenue, how much of that would drop down to EBITDA?
I'm not quite sure to answer it directly on that. I think just for clarity on what we're saying there is that, you know, this year, if we chose to, we could get a couple of million dollars of profit out of the business, you know, and mm-hmm. in fact, that kind of was, I think, something along those lines is where the default base case is. What we've decided to do explicitly is to ramp up the marketing, ramp up the development, etc., and to ramp up our movement into other verticals. And as a result, that's where that money is going, which is why it takes it back to being unprofitable this year. And then next year, what we see is basically the scaling of the business to get up to those kind of margins that we talked about earlier on. As the benefit of the benefits that flow from the investment this year.
Right, and then two others for me. Just on the $70 million expected base this year of revenue. What sort of growth rates are we looking at? Like double digits, teens? I mean, is there anything you can share on that?
Yeah, they are definitely double digit growth rates. I'm not sure if we're going to specify the exact thing, but they are very strong growth rates, and we expect to see those continuing. Okay. Over the next few years, and certainly the earnings CAGRs are extremely high.
Right, and then just two admin questions. How much D&A is going to go through the business roughly on an annualised basis?
This is a relatively low CapEx and D&A type business. So
yeah, there's a bit of development amortisation that's...
But maybe like a mill is a good mark.
Yeah, correct.
Sure, and then just finally, I presume APN at the group level is going to disclose this as part of its digital venture segment?
Yeah, we'll split it all out.
The business will be split out. Okay, no problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Roger Coleman from CCZ. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. Afternoon now. I'm just wondering, in terms of the product offering, I'm looking at Product Review, which has got 42 respondents on it, about the service standards in this company. And generally, it ranks from terrible to excellent, but pretty poor. 2.9 out of 5 is the average rating. I'm wondering, if, in infrastructure terms for the group, have you got enough qualified buyers? Do you need an Australian warehouse system? You know, which people like Home Shopping Network had to do and Deals Direct had to do, and how much of this sort of infrastructure and personnel investment is still required for the group in the future. I mean, this is taking a media company into retailing, unlike being a conduit like you were before. And the skill base for correcting it, I'm just wondering what media talent are you going to put on the board of APN? Retail talent on the board of APN to cope with owning 82% of this business.
Okay, well, I might get Daniel to answer the first part of the question, then I might come back to the retailer point.
So, first of all, from our members, 20% of our members turn into buyers, and we're actually quite proud that 70% of all buyers become repeat buyers.
So that shows that customer loyalty and retention is very, very high for Brands Exclusive. We differentiate ourselves with a customer service approach and culture. That means that customer service is part of all functions and not just of a customer service business unit. We conduct regular Net Promoter Score, which is the leading e-commerce customer satisfaction metrics, and here we trail always on over 60%, which is one of the highest in the industry. Obviously, there are review sites out there which when you go, for instance, to a hotel advisor and you check a hotel in Singapore, you always find a lot of negative reviews because we know that negative feedback spreads faster. These sites can be misused by the public. The quality control there is difficult. So we take these sites very seriously. We take that feedback on board. We are not perfect. Like every fast-growing company, we have areas that we can improve. But we also put it in proportion with the metrics that we have. To your questions on our buyers, as said, Brands Exclusive is a no inventory model. We don't buy the inventory, we source it. Our buying team is probably one of the best ones in the country. People with backgrounds of 15, 20 years industry experience from previous companies like David Jones, Myers, Topshop, and ASOS, they speak the language of the industry and then understand the product extremely well. That ensures that the product that we sell have the highest standards. We are a business that doesn't only compete on price. Our value proposition is to basically we compete for time and attention with aspirational products every single day, and we are brand extensions for the brand that we work with. Unlike other channels, we work directly with the brands in this country, i.e. we take pride to present their brands in the best possible way, unlike other channels that probably don't work directly with the brands and source them through secondary channels. The last thing, so warehousing, as mentioned before, it is a no inventory model, means we don't warehouse, so we have a distribution center which are operations, and this is something we're extremely good at.
Roger, it's Brett. I'll answer your second question with regard to the board and also just the focus from a media company's perspective. I mean, you know, these sorts of businesses we think are not as non-core as I think you're thinking. You know, this is a business around marrying consumers with commerce, and that's what we do every day as a media company. So we see this entirely as an extension of a media business. We don't see us getting into the retail business in a bricks and mortar sense, nor do we see us getting into the inventory business like Daniel's just said. So we see this as marketing and promoting brands to customers and building out a customer base. So we see that as a logical extension of a media company and certainly a logical extension of the digital businesses we've invested in. In terms of our board, you know, we have gone through board renewal, as you know, including quite a bit of experience coming to the board around retail. Melinda Conrad, who's on our board, is on the board of Reject Shop. John Harvey, who's on our board, is on a couple of retail boards, in particular Kathmandu. So we have recent relevant board experience around retail. And, you know, we have a culture at the board now in particular where, you know, we are embracing these digital models and embracing the future in this way. So from a board perspective, again, we're entirely aligned around this style of investment.
Okay, much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Nagnostelis from Deutsche Bank. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Just wanted to explore this barriers to entry and competitive advantage in this fast-moving space. How do you sort of market yourself? How do you differentiate yourself? And, you know, where do the members come from? Just wanted to get a sense of how you sort of line up relative to the competition. And also just in terms of the size of the market, what do you sort of see as the size of the market opportunity, and sort of the overall growth, let's say, in sort of 3 to 5 years' time, you know, if all goes well?
Yes, the first bit.
So for a business like ours, and this is where we're very similar to APN, so it's Daniel from Brands Exclusive, that Our vision is to be the energy between brands and consumers. Means we have two value propositions. One is targeted at the brands, and the other one is targeted at the consumers. So where's our competitive advantage in the B2B space? We're probably one of the companies that is best to deal with. We are able to solve inventory challenges of our brands, and we are a natural brand extension for our brands. So being on the brand's exclusive email for the brands is like being on the couch of Oprah Winfrey. So you're exposed to a very large audience that we basically connect these brands with the consumers with. On the consumer side, so the B2C value proposition, Brands Exclusive at first competes for time and attention. Again, this is where we're very similar to a media company, where every day we're producing content and have to be very relevant to our consumer so they look at our product. Unlike a store that has a fixed inventory that's the same for a couple of months or weeks, our store changes every single day. So we put about 60,000 images onto our website each single month, and that leads to a high stickiness and return visit rate for our customers. So customers come to our site, so similar like Facebook, they come to our site to see the new things or to not miss out on things, and then they also buy products because of the strong value proposition. Obviously, we present leading national and international brands, and at very, very good value that we can offer due to our no inventory business model. It allows us to save costs that we can pass on to the consumers.
Now, in terms of your second question, in terms of the size of the market, you know, we think the potential is massive. We covered it from two different angles. From a top-down perspective, I think, you know, e-commerce's penetration in Australia overall is well behind where it is in the UK and the US, and yet we've got all the kind of the right trends here in terms of internet usage, broadband, etc., that augur for that to get to those levels. So we think e-commerce overall has got a long way to go in terms of growth, and within the e-commerce landscape, we think online shopping clubs are still kind of a relatively small part. So there is a huge scope for growth here from that level. If we bring it down to more brass tacks, you know, we think with the kind of membership base sizes that we talked about earlier in Australia, for example, you only have to make very marginal increases in the amount you're selling on average to your members by, for example, moving into new verticals, and Brands Exclusive has done that with Living Exclusive, which is getting into homewares, and we think there's more opportunities beyond that. And marginal improvements to the margin by getting more sophisticated about pricing and so on. And certainly data analytics and the ability, and these businesses are very data rich, give us confidence we should be able to do those few different things. Very marginal assumptions there lead to substantial increases in revenue and profit in this business. So we think, you know, I'm not going to put a figure on it, but we think both of those macro, both the macro but also the brass tack driver analysis suggests that this could be a very big business within the next 5 years for us.
So just in terms of currently, what market share do you think you have? You mentioned there was one other major player. Sort of how do you see yourself relative to competition at the moment in the markets you're operating?
Do you guys want to comment on that? I mean,
obviously there's no public data available on this, so we can do an estimate, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically if you're talking about the online shopping club space, you know, then you know, we would be the number two player. We believe we can close the gap there, and then I think that the third player or smaller is very small, so we've probably got about a 40% share of the online shopping space, and we think we can improve that. And certainly, as I said before, you know, through our analysis and talking to the guys, you know, there is no players that are even close below Brands Exclusive and Ozsale, and they've all got a long way to go before they've reached minimum effective sort of scale here. So we think that's a pretty defensible market share. I will say, though, that, you know, one of the factors that's true for e-commerce is that it isn't a winner-takes-all market. So unlike some network effect businesses, like you might see with a sort of a Seek or an REA or so on, you know, you can have more than one player here that effectively coexists, much like you have more than one retailer in the traditional sense that coexists. So,
know, we think those different factors mean that we feel like we've got a pretty sustainable position here, and we feel like we've got the scale to make that a pretty defensible position. We certainly have a decent share of the market at the moment.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of James McBeath from Bly Capital. Go ahead, please.
Oh, morning, guys. Just a couple of quick ones. For Dan and Rolf, are you guys planning on exiting the business as with some of the other sites you sold earlier once we get past this FY13 payer?
I didn't understand the question.
Are you planning on buzzing off anytime soon?
I was planning on leaving straight after the FY13 payment.
No, why should we? No, we don't. We stick around. This is our baby, and our job's not finished yet. So we're very keen to stay on and build a very big business here.
Yeah, okay. And can I just ask, I know this is sort of a couple of questions have been asked around the whole sustainability exercise, but this is possibly one for the APN guys. When you were sitting down trying to get your heads around, you know, actually writing a check for, you know, $66 million potentially and paying up north of sort of 7-8 times EBITDA multiples, given the speed that some of these businesses do actually drop off, and it's not a competitive thing but more just the actual niche seems to evaporate in some of these businesses, how comfortable were you actually stumping up that multiple at this point in that timeline?
Yeah, look, I think we're comfortable from the from a few different perspectives. One of them is the actual achievements of the business to date. And, you know, this is not a pre-revenue business or anything like that. They are actually built this membership base and got to that scale already. And based on pretty detailed analysis of the drivers, very believable that those kind of things could be achieved. But secondly, you know, we have structured the deal so that if, you know, those don't manifest for whatever reason and we're unable to, then, you know, then we'll only have paid $36 million or somewhere between the 36 and the 66. And I think, building on this as well, we've also structured the deal in a way whereby the founders and the entrepreneurs that have made the business successful are very aligned to us in terms of risk and reward. And the deal is structured so that, you know, it's unlikely that they would want to leave within the next 3 to 4 years at least. So we've structured it in such a way that the people who have made it successful will be there. And, you know, there'll be jinks and turns and dives just like there is in all kind of fast-moving spaces here, but we've got those guys locked into it. So I think those few different things give us confidence that this is a sensible investment. It's not without risk as anything in this space is, but if you look at the rest of the media sector, there's not too much of it that's without risk. So, you know, we feel like it's an appropriate risk-adjusted return on this investment that we can expect.
And so, James, it's Brett also. I mean, look, we didn't go into this half-hearted either. You know, we've been looking in this space for the last 12 to 18 months. We spent a lot of time working with our board looking at the strategy for digital. We've looked at the e-commerce landscape globally a number of times. We've spent a lot of time looking at players all around the world and meeting with them and understanding the issues they've had. We've looked at various business models and we've come to the conclusion that we're very comfortable with this business model and, as Matt said, very comfortable with this business and the guys running this business. So there's nothing half-hearted about this. This is well thought through, and we think an area in e-commerce that has substantial growth.
And I guess the only thing I'd, James, it's Pete Myers, the only thing I'd add is that I think that we've also built our confidence around what we can see and touch in the GrabOne business, how that GrabOne business has built over time, how we see the margins and the earnings and the incremental earnings dropping through to the bottom line. I think that's certainly built on our confidence, and I guess that we've taken the view that, you know, whilst when you go back only a couple of years, or less than a couple of years probably, when GrabOne was in its infancy, you know, we don't think that opportunity exists in Australia to kind of start at exactly that stage. We needed to get more scale more quickly. But it was certainly built on the confidence that we've had as we've watched that business model unfold very closely.
Yeah, I guess that's where I was going with it, was just that, I mean, the multiple we're talking about on an FY13 number, so you've already banked on your financial year another 18 months worth of growth. And so if you're then going to pay sort of 7 or 8 times from that point onwards, you must have a reasonable degree of confidence that this is actually quite a long-term business, which would be new for the digital space.
That's
absolutely.
We've got a long-term view on it, you're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ivor Rees from Wilson HTM. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Just a bit of clarification on the $70 million revenue figure you mentioned earlier. That $70 million, is that the current run rate or what you think the business will generate in this calendar year?
That's correct. That's what we're expecting the outturn will be for calendar 2012.
And if I might just ask another question there, the gross profit margin on this business last year was about 27%. Just a bit under 27%. Are those EBITDA numbers you're working on, are you assuming you can grow the gross margin over the next 2 years?
My recollection is that we're not assuming that we're going to be moving the gross margin in the next 2 years.
Margin expansion, I think, is expected to be upside.
Yeah, as I flagged earlier, that's correct. If we can improve that by even a few percentage points, it makes a big difference, but that is not assumed within the base case numbers.
And just, your other big expenses really are employees and marketing. You had a huge ramp up in the employee costs last year as the business grew. Is that going to grow, is the employee cost going to grow relative to revenue, or is it going to decline as a percentage of revenue as the business gets more scale?
It's a scale business, it'll decline.
It will decline.
Yeah. And the marketing expense as well?
Well, I think the marketing expense will come up as well, right? So it's going to be a high marketing expense year this year because we're in a major acquisition phase.
Yeah.
But we would expect the marketing costs to come off at least around the kind of verticals where we're reaching kind of relatively saturation. But, we may well pursue additional verticals where we will heavily market as well as we build confidence in, increase confidence in the returns to doing so. But all else being equal, I think the marketing relative cost will come off over the years beyond this year.
Okay. And just on your postage cost there, is that pretty much going to be fixed as a relationship to revenue, or is there any opportunity to bring that down as well?
As we achieve scale, there's always opportunities that will be there around...
The distribution costs are broadly variable.
Yeah, the distribution costs are broadly variable. We'll obviously get increasing scale efficiencies in the actual kind of unit cost for the logistics and distribution centres and so on. And obviously our negotiating position in terms of our external suppliers will improve as we get bigger scale as well. So I think that's probably the punchline on that.
Okay.
Right, guys, if I just have just time for one more question, if that's okay.
Sure, and your last question comes from the line of Eric Choi from UBS. Go ahead, please.
Afternoon, guys. Just two quick questions for me. Firstly, presume that the transaction will be funded from existing cash, and so it looks like net debt to EBITDA could move to around 2.5 times, assuming the full $66 million is paid. So just wondering if you think this level of gearing limits your ability to make future acquisitions, given some other media companies have degeared to 2 to 2.5 times recently. And just a second question, sort of a housekeeping matter. Noted that you expect the transaction to be earnings neutral in 2012, but just wondering if you can give some guidance on when you think the transaction will actually complete.
Right. So the transaction is complete.
Yeah, it's completed this morning.
It's completed. So
right.
It'll be relatively neutral to us in 2012 for all the reasons that Matt has said and the push around marketing and customer acquisition. The broader question about gearing is, I think we made the point when we did the APN Outdoor transaction that we banked, something in the order of $180 million net proceeds there. This is the redeployment of a small amount of that. We still generate significant cash flows in this business, in the broader APN business, that continues. We have the opportunity to keep working our way at those debt levels. I think we've always said that, that sort of a range and indeed when we got to a range that perhaps was at the upper end of where the market was comfortable, we took some action with the outdoor transaction, and this doesn't really change the dial materially on where we've landed post that outdoor transaction. That made a significant improvement to the balance sheet. We're happy with that, and we're happy to reinvest the money here.
Yeah, I think it is worth stressing as well that so there's $36 million that went through at completion this morning, and the second payment would go through in early 2014. So it's not all the 66 out the door at the moment now as well. So it's structured in that way.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Okay, we might wrap it up there. So look, thank you very much everybody for attending the call. As we said at the start, you know, we're enormously proud of this acquisition. It's an important milestone for APN. I certainly know it's an important milestone for the guys here, and look, we're excited about it. So again, thank you for your time, and look, if anyone has any follow-up questions, I'm sure we're happy to answer those in due course.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your attendance. You may all now disconnect.